And they will make you think that you've been kidnapped, right? They'll create some circumstance where you think that
What?
you can't leave the hotel room. And what they'll do is they'll say, "Hey, look out your window. You're going to see a blue van across the street. That van has our team in it." And then they'll hire someone in the hotel. They'll pay them off to go like knock on the door, bang really hard, and be like, "Hey, we have guys in the hallway, right? You're going to hear them bang on the door." And then you think like they're outside the hotel, they're in the hallway. What do I do? And they ask for money.
Welcome back to season two of Voices of Blockchain, the official podcast of Boston Blockchain Week 2025. Today I'm sitting down with Alec Harris, a key figure behind Haven X, a company that's all about protecting people and their assets in the wild world of crypto and beyond. We're diving into the gritty details of digital and physical security, from dodging sophisticated cyber attacks to outsmarting real-world threats like SIM swaps and virtual kidnappings. Alex breaks down how adversaries target their marks and what you're unknowingly sharing online and how to make yourself a harder target without living like a hermit. So whether you're a crypto OG or someone just trying to keep their digital life locked down, this conversation is packed with insights. So check out Haven X at thehavenx.com and keep an eye out for Alex's talk at Boston Blockchain Week. You can grab your full pass for the experience, the panels, the art, meetups, the late night crypto chaos, all at bostonblockchainweek.com. So without any further ado, let's get into it with Alec Harris. How you doing today, Alex?
Hey, Kyle. Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, I've actually been looking forward to this one. I tried to get some stories from Ian about you because he mentioned that you guys went to school. We were doing our pre-call, and he was being a little tight-lipped. He wouldn't give me anything juicy.
Was he? That's because I have the dirt on him, and so
I was
knows,
hoping that'd
like,
be the case.
you know, like we're in this kind of prisoner's dilemma where neither of us can share anything.
Okay. So tell me about Haven X. How'd you get involved with that?
Yeah. So Haven X is actually a fairly recently incorporated entity, 2023, but it was a spin out of a company called Halo that I've been involved with for a long time. So the decision was made to spin out Haven X in part because the team that came along with that was really focused on private sector, and through some strategic initiative ended up being very focused on the crypto sector. So we are not like a crypto native company per se, but we have more than half of our clients are in the crypto space. And that's been true for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And so that's the space that we probably enjoy the most. That's the one I enjoy the most, but we take all comers.
Looking through the website when I was preparing for this call, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you guys do more than just data security. Like it's a whole narrative deal, intelligence. There's even like CEO like protection stuff you guys do too, which is kind of neat. So like, who exactly are you catering to then?
So yes, we cover a range of things, which includes digital security and physical security, and increasingly those two are overlapping, if not completely linked. And so our client set tends to be people who either take security very seriously and have a reason to, right? So they might be executives, they might have public personas or exposure or working companies that are flashpoints, or they're in crypto, right? And so, you know, they're tracking all of the digital and physical attack trends in the space. And so they might come to us for some range of defensive services, privacy, obfuscation of payments or addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, right? Like make them a harder target.
Right.
And then another or maybe equal area of clientele for us is corporate, but corporate tends to be smaller groups, right? Like what we do doesn't always apply to the whole company. It might apply to executives or teams in a company that are handling intellectual property or money or that kind of stuff that have more risk.
So, I mean, it sounds like you guys basically cater just about anybody then, like even if it was just me and my little wallet and I wanted to make sure that, you know, people aren't finding my information online, I can talk to you about that kind of stuff too, even, Greg.
Sure. Yeah. And the premise is largely that, and I'll speak mainly to the problem set in crypto. Adversaries are getting more and more sophisticated, and they tend to do digital targeting before they do hacking, before they do physical targeting, right? They do their diligence, adversaries do.
And so I guess they makes sense then, right? Because you don't want to waste a bunch of time on a target if you don't know if they have, like, I guess you can learn a lot on social media about a person's habits and what they have in order for you to even take, right?
So super obvious, simple answer or example is, so you take someone who's an executive at a company associated with crypto, and you do some diligence and you find the first time they ever tweeted about crypto, let's say it was 2013. Okay, mm-hmm. So now we know this person's been in the market for 12 years. We can make some assumptions about maybe they've accrued some price, some right. value accumulation because they've been around a long time. And then we look and say, have they discussed self-custody, right? Do they care about self-custody? And if they've been in crypto a long time and they've said something about self-custody, now they put themselves in a category that they might have a Trezor at home, right? We don't know that for sure, but it's possible. And so that's the type of diligence that would be done to decide who's a good target and who's not. And then you might assess the property. You might look at their digital movements, their physical movements, the people around them, right? Who's the most vulnerable access point? And so we would reverse all of that, reverse engineer it, and then find a more defensible posture. That's what we would offer.
Wow. I find that fascinating that some of the examples you gave, like have they mentioned self-custody or things like that, like just to identify how strong of a target they could be. It almost sounds like you're better off just posting a bunch of stuff, even if you don't actually do it, just to make you look like a harder target, right? It's like what do they call those? The ADT stickers you can buy. You don't actually have to get the home defense system. You can just put the sticker in the window. It kind of sounds like that.
It's just like that. I actually recommend that to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And there are certain companies, you know, publicly traded companies in the crypto space that are extremely tight-lipped around who controls custody, who has access to hot wallets, who has, you know, multi-sig permissions, right? Like those types of data points are really, really valuable and can make someone a target just by virtue of their job, right? And so that's where we might enter.
Then you got to worry about things like, I would imagine North Korea or other state actors would be targeting you if you're like affiliated with an exchange.
Sure. No, those tend to be digital, but we've had clients that have been approached by what turned out to be North Korean employees and trying to get hired into the company, right? And this, we've seen this story in the news. We know this happens sometimes successfully. And so, especially in the advent of the increase in remote work, right, that type of attack has become easier.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Speaking of the privacy and I guess the online profile, one of the things we talked about pre-recording this was what kind of footprint I had out there. So we talked a little bit before the call started, but maybe we can speak in more, I guess, generic terms so you don't dox me by accident here. But maybe you can talk about some of the things that we found and some of the things that maybe I'm doing well and some of the areas that I can improve to, you know, make my digital presence maybe more secure, I guess would be the right word.
Sure. Well, and Kyle, thanks for being the guinea pig. So as we were saying, and this is actually true, Kyle turned out to be kind of a hard target. And so we pulled some data records, we pulled some breach data, looked at interrogating phone numbers, looked at spouses and address history, looking for social security numbers. We did find, you know, some address information, phone number information, social security number. We would expect to find that kind of information. We found some, you know, cohabitants at these addresses that would suggest
that was a little shocking.
Spouses or children. Yeah. But for whatever reason, and my thought is that you're probably not oversharing online. You're not creating a bunch of accounts that you don't need. You're not posting on social media all the time. You actually have a pretty minimal footprint. And that tends to be the after picture, right? So if we had just met and you said, hey, what can I do? I would actually start by saying, continue generally doing what you're doing.
Right.
The flip side of that is all of us, myself included, just by living in 2025, will have a digital footprint. And no matter how good we are, we tend to have someone else in our life who is a potential vulnerability around us. And maybe it's a spouse or maybe like it's Aunt Mildred who always posts pictures of the family reunion, right? Like it's almost impossible to lock down everyone around you as well. And so as you know, someone who works in the open source intelligence space, that's what we're looking for. And so if we say, hey, Kyle's a hard target, move on. How's the wife? How's the mom? You know, are there kids, right? Are there colleagues, right? Where is the in? What's the access point, and exploit that. And so, you know, you are doing a great job. And
but that doesn't do me any good if my daughter's up there posting all my work schedules and details, you know, without me knowing, or taking shots behind my back, maybe capturing images of screens or things like that.
Yeah, and a great example of this time of year, right? We're almost coming into the beginning of the new school year, and everyone likes to take the first day of school photo on the front porch or, you know, whatever. That photo we see all the time, and it has an address, like a street number, and it might have other identifiers that can help us to identify a property or verify that the property we see in public records is actually the house that they live in. Right. And so these little Easter eggs that data collect over time, and a good investigator will take little pieces and put them all together and start painting a picture of someone. And so that matters maybe very little to some people, but to those of us in crypto who, you know, are experiencing these swatting attacks, experiencing these home invasions, right? Like, that matters quite a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Something I saw was talking about your digital footprint, like your digital footprint and how unique it is, how easy it is for people to identify you just based on things like credit card transaction data. How true is that? Is that something that maybe we should be concerned about as well?
Super true. So I'll give you a couple of examples of us. So first of all, the data broker industry in the United States is like a $200 billion revenue industry. And if you took all of that revenue and combined it, it's actually more than the budget of all the intelligence agencies in the United States combined.
Wow.
So data brokers bigger than the NSA and the CIA and everyone else together. And these data brokers, I know for a fact, like one of them called Axiom, which is one of the top 10, collects 50 trillion data points a year. 50 trillion. That's credit card taps, that's clicks, likes, repeats, forwards, shares, right? All of that information. And they anonymize it. But with that much data, you can imagine how, even if it's anonymous, it becomes so specific to you that it can be identified. And so you can combine that with other data sets and enrich it and get a very good picture of you or me or really anyone. And then there's these more esoteric data points, like the cadence with which we type tends to be unique, right? So the way I type, the pace that I type, right, that is unique to me. The same as there's something called gait analysis, which is the way I walk is unique to me. And so there's all of these identifiers that aren't even facial recognition. They're not me wearing a t-shirt with my name on it, right? But they can signify with a fair amount of credibility who I am if you have that ability to collect. So you're exactly right, right? These digital signatures reveal who we are in real life.
You mentioned gait identification. That's the first time I've ever heard of that. Is that been used like in courts to like prove somebody in a video? Like, is like how much faith do people have in that? Yeah.
So apparently it's fairly good. I think it's probably more the provenance of governments at this point. I'm not sure if it's ever been used in court.
Sort of like an Interpol kind of thing, or?
Yeah, right. So like if you had, if you were in a smart city, a city that had a lot of cameras, and you couldn't quite make out a face or facial recognition, you might be able to do that pattern analysis on the gate and, you know, match up two individuals as the same person, for instance. And so that I do believe is happening. And I know there are some people that are so into privacy that they'll like put a pebble in their foot, in their shoe, right, to like alter their gait. And so, yeah, that type of thing exists. That's more on the fringes, right? That's not like the everyday data collection. But you take all of those 50 trillion data points plus the cadence of your typing and the way that you walk, and you're starting to imagine the surveillance state, which unfortunately is actually what we live in. I'm not saying you need to be paranoid all the time, but we do live in a surveillance state.
Yeah. Is this what your presentation talk is going to be based on when you present at Boston Blockchain this year?
Yeah. So we're going to talk a lot about digital physical combined risk. But one of the things I'm going to describe is how you can take marketing data that comes off of a mobile phone, which is called ad tech data, and you can buy it commercially and you can use it to track someone, and how that type of data could be used to identify someone's movements and find the right place to kidnap them.
Because
you can start seeing what their habits are. And would they do that to me or you? Like, probably not, right? But if someone, you know, potentially was a Bitcoin OG who maybe have, you know, $10 billion worth of Bitcoin,
right?
Sure. Would you go that far? Yeah, why not?
Yeah. What was that saying from, was that movie Way of the Gun? $15 million becomes, it's not money anymore. Now it's a motive, I think.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that kind of data is out there and it's available, right? Like I'm going to show, because we have purchased that data, how anyone can buy it.
That is insane.
Yeah, it's crazy.
What about like the smart devices in our homes then, like the Alexas and the things like that? Are those things storing records of what we're saying? Can that information be used against us at later points in time? I think I remember seeing a court case about that where somebody was actually convicted based on Alexa recordings.
Yeah, Alexa recordings or like wearables, right? Like health
Yeah.
wearables indicating like where you claim to be. All that Internet of Things is a
Yeah.
huge attack vector. First of all, because a lot of people receive it and don't ever change the default settings.
I always turn them all off. I do
Yeah,
not want
excellent,
that.
right?
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of times they come with a default password. People just don't change that. And so that's a vulnerability. Frequently, anything that's voice activated has to have some persistent listening state, or else it can't hear the voice activation.
Right. What happens to that data?
Great question, right? Like, Apple and I would trust Apple over Amazon, right? But they are all moving it somewhere so that they can process it and order whatever you ordered or perform on whatever the request is. But then there's questionable amounts of retention policy around them. Is it 30 days? Is it 90 days? Is it as long as is needed to improve service, right? We don't really know. And then the other problem is that once you get these devices in your house, they start talking to other devices. And so an example is you have a smart TV in your living room and it's on the home Wi-Fi. And so the smart TV may have an ad on the screen. And if your phone is on the Wi-Fi, then the TV is going to check to see if you looked up that item that is in the commercial. And
Oh
they'll bundle
no.
that together and they'll say, hey, we just sold a successful ad based on the user engagement on home network, right? So
Huh.
if it can do that, imagine what else it could do on the home network, or what a malicious actor could do if it got control inside of that device.
You say malicious actor, but to be honest with you, I consider Amazon and Apple to be malicious actors at this point.
Yeah, I mean, and you got to pick your poison, right? Like you're going to have some technology in your house typically.
Yeah.
Figuring out a way to be somewhere in a happy medium that's appropriate for you and your family between security on one end and convenience on the other, and having your spouse not hate you and your kids still be able to have friends. And like it's different for everyone, right? But like it would be easy to just be like, oh, tear it all out, right? Then
Yeah.
you're good. But that's not reality.
I mean, the same issue happened when cell phone records were coming out, right? When cell phone companies were like storing all the records of your calls and text messages. Like, why do they need to keep 2, 3 years worth of records of my text messages? Why do we not have control of our data? How did that precedent get set? And is there anything we can do about that to take control of it again?
There's limited things you can do with the telcos, right? And so, what we have seen through some of these intentional leaks is that, like AT&T in particular, but all of them were playing nice with the intelligences in the US. And so they were storing data in a way that was requested of them. And I'm like 49% crypto anarchist and 51% patriot, right? So like, I want to just believe that the NSA needed that data to keep us safe. And I'm sure the intentions were good, right? But once you have all that data collected, first of all, the temptation to misuse it will always be there. And your adversary is going to want to get at it too, right? And so we can never totally mitigate it, but things like not having your iCloud backup stored with Apple is a great way to limit the attack vectors on your phone, right? Because then there's no copy of your phone mirrored on Apple's servers.
Is that why everybody wants the backup and cloud? Like, the OneDrive is set up automatically on Microsoft these days, and
It's one angle on it. But for instance, like
yeah.
if law enforcement is going to subpoena a phone, they're not actually going to go ask for the phone if they can go to Apple and get the iCloud backup,
Right, because
right? And so
they don't want you to
it's
know
much
too.
harder, yeah, right? And so that those backups are and like Pegasus, for instance, like some of these like zero click malware exploits that are out there, those can go after backups as well. And so like one way we can take over and have more agency is to have more control over our data and where it lives. But I totally am sympathetic and empathetic to anyone who's listening who's like, I just can't do all of that stuff,
I know,
right? And
I know.
so if it sounds like too much, it's probably because it is, but start somewhere, and doing a little bit is better than doing nothing. And I subscribe to this theory that you don't have to be living in a fortress, but you can be in the best lit house on the street. And that'll be a deterrent in and of itself.
It's the you don't have to outrun the bear, you just have to outrun your friend.
Yeah. So, no, that's exactly what it is, right? Yeah, just don't be the slowest antelope. Yeah.
So you promised me some case studies. Do you have any good ones that you can share?
Yeah, so without naming names to protect the innocent or the guilty. So one thing that we've seen over and over is that singular instances of noncompliance are the same as organizational noncompliance. And that sounds like a bunch of jargon, but what I mean is, and this would apply to a family as much as it would apply to an organization. If you have 10 executives in a company and 9 out of 10 of them are doing all of the things they're supposed to do and one doesn't, that is basically the same thing as none of them doing it. Because of what we were talking about, because the adversaries are doing right. diligence, right? And so we've seen this with clients where they've actually had crypto treasuries stolen, mm-hmm. and the attack vector was against the one person who decided for whatever reason, and these could be plausible reasons, right? I'm not saying anyone's intentionally being...
No, these are very well-funded, slick organizations that target these people. You can't... I feel bad for the people who are targeted because...
So, but here's what happened in one case. So, a company had really excellent SIM. You know what a SIM swap is? If I say SIM swap,
no. You mean like the phone, like their SIM card on your phone?
Yeah, phone SIM card. Okay. Yeah. So basically, it's an attack where someone will social engineer their way into taking over your phone number.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so they will call up AT&T and they'll say, "Hey, I'm traveling. I lost my phone. I really need to get my number on a new phone. I'm not gonna, Yeah. And they put a crying kid on record in the background and they create, urgency. Or they go to the AT&T kiosk at the mall and they slip someone $100 or whatever. And all of a sudden they've taken over your phone number. And now they can receive SMSs, which could be used to access an account, right? A bank account or a crypto exchange or whatever.
Two-factor authentication.
Your two-factor authentication. So in this one company, all but one executive signed up for this really strong SIM swap protection. Well, guess whose phone was SIM swapped and they got $15 million worth of corporate treasury and tokens, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by it really takes full compliance in order to create that strong defense. And it's just like a castle with a moat that only goes around 90% of the castle.
Right. Right?
Well, where do you think the enemy is going to roll up, right? So we've seen that. But what we really see in a recurring way is that adversaries, even though they're getting smarter, will go after targets of opportunity. And opportunity comes through diligence, and diligence starts digital. And so by the time some of these people have been kidnapped and had their thumbs cut off, right, which has been happening, usually 4 or 5 things have gone wrong. And because they broadcasted their location, they've shared something about their wealth, they have revealed that they self-custody or are likely to self-custody. They're doing a live YouTube from their home, right, that you can see in the background. That now we know you're home, right? All of these data points come together and make someone a target. And so the chances of just the average Bitcoiner being targeted who's doing a lot of things to protect themselves, fairly slim.
Yeah.
It's happened, right? But typically there is some reason that they became a target. Now maybe they were on vacation and they had a Bitcoin sticker on their laptop and some, bad guy saw them, right? That happens. But typically there's some advanced work. And so the vignettes that I've seen, we've been doing this since 2017, have almost all had some element of targeting in the lead up.
When you first started talking about the case study, I thought the direction you were going to go was similar how OSHA statistics are, where one instance of non-compliance of safety parameters or near miss really equates to this many of the level below it of infractions. So when you see one, you're missing the other 1,000, 100,000 other things that got missed or swept over. Are not complied with that led to this one that you know about. But what it looks like more what you're saying here in this case is that you were really only as strong as the weakest member of your team. And that is really what the focus needs to be on. You cannot have anybody not taking it seriously, especially in a industry like crypto.
Yeah, I would say that's true. And there's a lot of attacks that occur. Right? There's a new ransomware attack every 11 seconds. Mm-hmm. That's how often ransomware is occurring. People don't realize it, but 58% of all home invasions occur during the daytime. right? So no, like, I always think like, I always think, oh, it's 3 a.m., right? I got to protect 3 a.m. That's actually not.
Yeah, everyone's home at 3 a.m. You want to do it when they're at work.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, sure. Right. And so like being educated about the reality of the risks then allows people to have a thoughtful and intelligent response to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if that was a long-winded answer to your question, but
I think, well, I don't know. There was no real question in there. I think we're just hearing interesting stories. So what else can Haven do to like protect someone who's identified some areas where they think they can improve? Like what resources can you offer them?
Yeah, so I've said this to almost every client that we've ever brought on. I'm not an alarmist. I'm not a encourager of a paranoid mindset. I'm not a, you got to do everything, except for in rare cases where someone's coming in an exigent, you know, emergent state, right?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, I'm very much in the, like, let's first assess your risk, right? Let's do the diligence that an adversary would do and show you what that looks like. And then have a thoughtful, calibrated approach that is tolerable to you, tolerable to your colleagues, tolerable to your spouse, right? Allows you to still be successful, you know, in work and not inserting so much friction that you're so slow that, you know, you become like, you basically live in an enclave that is secure but impossible to perform in, right?
Right,
so,
right.
And if someone wants to go all the way, right, I'll meet them there because I live pretty far into the extreme. But, you know, what's worse is to try to get someone to do so much that they don't want to do any of it.
Yeah, when you try to do too much at once, then it's really hard to make those changes stick.
It's hard to get them to stick. And it's like, you know, if your diet is supposed to be so pristine that you never get to like walk by a bakery and have a cookie, like what are the chances of you complying with that diet, yeah. Right? And then find that point and then, you know, have a plan for the, you know, if something emergent happens, if, you know, the sky starts falling, you can have a plan and we can be there with you, right? But if you're doing the basic blocking and tackling, you're making yourself a hard target. What we say is you want to be what's called, and I'm borrowing this phrase from a friend of mine, you want to be abort mission criteria, mm-hmm. which is the bad guys looking at you and they're like, abort mission, for whatever reason. Too hard, you know, uncertain, too risky, can't tell if there's a good reward there, right? Whatever their abort mission criteria is, you want to be that.
Because I look like Stallone. That's what
I'm ramming. But Kyle, like, you know, I'm not just saying this, right? You are abort mission criteria based on the data we pulled. Because there's very little data. And so it's really hard to corroborate it. There's not a lot of content there. So it just doesn't tell us much. And I'd rather move on to the next person that we can really do a deep dive on because they have a lot of data out there.
You want more of a sure bet.
For sure.
Yeah. The murkier you make that assessment, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, right. And then be smart, right? Like, don't put a Bitcoin sticker on. Don't wear any Bitcoin merch, right?
Right. Put it on your neighbor's house, not yours.
Put it on your neighbor's house. No, like, be thoughtful about anyone who actually knows where you live. Be thoughtful about the things that you share with them, right?
Yeah.
And then if you want to have a public persona, if you want to host a podcast, if you want to speak at a conference, you know, if you want to be associated with the industry, and I do, right? If you take the digital protection steps carefully and seriously, then you should be entitled to do all the stuff you want in public because you've done your protections.
I'm living proof of that. I've got 5 years of podcasts out there. I've talked about a lot of things about my life. And if it's not obvious through what you just did now, then, I mean, obviously that's, you can still do that kind of stuff and not have that big of an effect on your life.
Yeah. And so for you, right, having a lot of video and audio content, that the opportunity to, you know, create a voice clone, create a
that could be an issue, yeah.
Like that would be more likely an attack attempt or a good vector against you. Not that I'm encouraging it, but what it does allow for, which not everyone's heard of this, but it creates an opportunity for what's called a virtual kidnapping. Have you heard of that?
Oh, where they just pretend like they have you and then send it to the people who care about you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Yep. And so they can use that with voice clones, with audio clones. Right. They all they need to know is that maybe you're out of the country and that presents the opportunity for like some dislocation in your pattern and then, you know, presents that virtual kidnapping. And sometimes you're the target of the virtual kidnapping too. Right. So sometimes they'll go to call your mom and be like, we've got Kyle, and they use your voice and get her to wire money or, you know, open a Cash App account or whatever.
Right.
But sometimes they'll call your hotel room and they will make you think that you've been kidnapped, right? They'll create some circumstance where you think that that you can't leave the hotel room. And what they'll do is they'll say, hey, look out your window. You're going to see a blue van across the street. Yeah. You know, that van has our team in it. And then they'll hire someone in the hotel. They'll pay them off to go like knock on the door, you know, bang really hard and be like, hey, we have guys in the hallway. Right. You're going to hear them bang on the door. And then you think, uh-oh, like they're outside the hotel. They're in the hallway. What do I do? And they ask for money. Right. And you pay it off. And you weren't in any particular danger, but they've created an environment where you think you are.
They're getting very, very creative. I think these people who are scamming, I mean, they're just getting more and more creative. As the money gets more and more lucrative, they're just going to get better and better at this. So the services that you guys are offering over at Haven X, they're awesome. I hope people check them out. I know that from the conversations we've had, you not only created all this stuff, but you're also a user of all of them. You've tested everything yourself personally. So I feel a little bit more confident in what you're saying here is stuff that I can do and add to my daily routine without too much trouble. So I really do appreciate the time, the thoughts, the recommendations you have here. I can't wait to see you at Boston Blockchain. I planned on being there. I hope I get a chance to see your presentation. Anything you want to leave us with anywhere? I think the website was thehavenx.com. Is there anywhere else people can go to find you? Socials?
Not a socials guy.
Okay. Yeah. So does Haven have a social?
We do, but I don't even know what it is.
Okay.
I think it's at the Haven X on Instagram and
see, he lives it. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to meeting up with you. Shout out to our mutual friend, Ian Kane. I won't dox him in a digital platform, but I'll tell you all the stories when we meet up.
Oh, I love it. All right. Well, have a great day, Alex, and thank you so much for your time today.
Cheers, Kyle.
Big thank you to Alex for dropping some serious knowledge on us on how to stay secure in a world where your digital footprint can make or break you. Head over to thehavenx.com to learn more about Haven's services, and don't miss Alex's presentation at Boston Blockchain Week 2025. If you're joining us in September, make sure you snag your tickets at bostonblockchainweek.com for access to all the talks, networking, and that signature blockchain energy. Follow the show, share this episode with someone who needs to tighten up their security game, and we'll catch you all next time on Voices of Blockchain.
Produced by China Shop Productions.